So for the next 4 or 5 sermons, I'm still undetermined on that, I want us to take a closer look at discipleship. So it started off as a series of 3 sermons. I'm past for in a possible 5th one, and might even grow further. But I doubt if we would be able to finish this before at Lent start. But anyways, we're going to take a closer look at discipleship for the next, I don't know how many Sundays. Because hopefully by now, we know that this is what it's all about. Being disciples of Jesus, and then making disciples of Jesus. And even if we don't do both of these faithfully, we have to concede that this is the whole premise of our faith. To be disciples of Jesus and to make disciples of Jesus. And I want us to take a closer look at discipleship by focusing on the prototype discipleship. Oh, it's my feet. Let me just get out here and get in again. There we have it. But by looking at the prototype disciple. Now, a lot of New Testament scholars refer to the Apostle Peter as the prototype disciple. And if you spend some time reading through the Gospels, you might quickly realize that Peter was the leader amongst the rest of Jesus' inner circle, between the 12 closest followers of Jesus, amongst the apostles. So I want us, over the next 5 or 6 weeks, Larry would be preaching somewhere in between, to zoom in on the life of Peter. And in doing so, we will hopefully also move the magnifying glass over to our own lives as disciples of Jesus Christ ourselves, and see if we need to adjust somewhere. By looking at the prototype disciple, see if we should maybe make some adjustments in our own life. So let's get straight into our scripture reading this morning, coming from Matthew 14, verses 22 to 33. Immediately Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to the other side while he dismissed the crowd. This is after feeding the 5,000. After he had dismissed them, he went up on a mountainside by himself to pray. Later that night, he was there alone, and the boat was already a considerable distance from land, buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. Shortly before dawn, Jesus went out to them, walking on the lake. When the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. "It's a ghost," they said, and cried out in fear. But Jesus immediately said to them, "Take courage, it is I. Don't be afraid." "Lord, if it's you," Peter replied, "tell me to come to you on the water." "Come," he said. And then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water, and came toward Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid, and beginning to sink, cried out, "Lord, save me." Immediately, Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. "You of little faith," he said, "why did you doubt?" And when they climbed into the boat, the wind died down. Then those who were in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." Now, this is a very familiar account of Jesus interacting with his disciples. It's probably one of those stories that even non-Christians would be able to recall for some reason. A lot of people would know that Jesus at some time walked on water, or so it's been told, if they are not believers. And then some would even know about this guy that started walking and then sank. Now, I remember, I think it was around the time I started high school, that our minister read this passage one Sunday, and I was intrigued. Not for the reason that Jesus was able to walk on the water. By that time, I was used to the idea that Jesus walked on water. I got introduced to this side of Jesus even before starting school. So that didn't intrigue me. Something else intrigued me. So as the minister was reading this, I turned to my dad and whispered, "What was wrong with the boat?" And my dad he just hushed me and directed my eyes to the pulpit. But have you ever wondered about this? What was wrong with the boat? Honestly, who of you have wondered about this? What was wrong with the boat? Now, we tend to think that the boat was taking on water. Honestly, who's got that idea in their head that the boat was taking on water? Yeah, there's some people. You know why we do that? If we quickly have to recall this account, a lot of us would get stuck, probably taking on water. Because of the narrative of Jesus calming the storm. Now, when Jesus calmed the storm, he was on the boat with the disciples from the start and he was sleeping. And then there was a storm and the boat started taking on water. That's the boat taking on water story. In all three accounts of Jesus walking on the water, in the Gospels of Matthew, Mark, and John, there's nothing in those accounts telling us that there was something wrong with the boat, that it was leaking, that it had a hole in it, that it took on water because of the storm, or anything like that. There was nothing wrong with the boat in any of the gospel accounts. The boat was in top shape. The boat was in top shape. Yes, it's given the lake was stormy, and the wind was against the boat and against the disciples, and the waves were big. And if you've been on a rough lake or rough seas, you probably have seen that. Then you see land, and then you see walls of water, and then you see land. It was probably like that. But the boat was fine. Now, this was very late at night when Jesus was walking toward them, between 3 and 6 in the morning. I think our translation, the NIV, said it was almost daybreak. The original text said in the fourth night watch, which means 3 to 6, which is 3 o'clock in the morning until the sun comes up. So they have been at this stage on the lake for the whole night since it became evening when Jesus sent away the people that he fed. He sent the disciples onto the lake. And then he went to pray. This is between 3 and 6 in the morning, shortly before daybreak. So the boat was on the lake, in the wind, for the whole night, and it was able to withstand the storm. So it seems like it was well built. And then Peter jumped out of a perfectly good boat. That just doesn't make sense. I mean, Jesus was coming towards them. The boat was fine. Jesus is on his way to the boat. It's a stormy sea. Why would he jump out of a perfectly good boat? It doesn't make sense. When I was younger, this story and sermons around it had me believe, intentionally or not, I don't know, that Peter got scared of the storm and wanted to get to Jesus for protection. And I've heard sermons on this saying that in the storms of life we have to run to Jesus. And it does make sense. That's true. But why, if the boat was perfectly good, get out and jump into the water? And I think the reason for this lies in the relationship that a disciple had with his rabbi. So we have to understand something about discipleship and how disciples related to their rabbis in the ancient Near East at the time Jesus walked this earth, if we want to understand or try and understand Peter's reaction. And I stumbled onto a book in 2007 written by Ray Vanderlaan that's on Focus on the Family, that helped me to understand this. Now, firstly, we have to take a step back and look at the Jewish educational system. Now, that part I knew, because we learned that in seminary, but he had to I had to read his book to get into this last part of how these two are connected. So anyway, let's start with Jesus and the community he lived in. Jesus was ministering in an Orthodox Jewish community. They held fast to the law. And it's not just the Ten Commandments, but the bigger volume called the Torah. The first five books of the Bible. And the Torah was also called the Way, because it was the only instruction for living. It described the best possible way for anybody to live, and that is according to God's way. So the Jews of the time ate and drank and slept Torah, and every inch of their life was regulated by it. And if you lived in those times, you figured this out at a very young age. You see, the Torah was only accessible in the synagogue. So you couldn't have your own copies. It's not like our Bibles, that every house has got a copy, and now we even have it on our phones. You couldn't have your own copy. You could only read it either in the temple, which there was only one temple in Jerusalem, or in the synagogue. So here is the problem. How should you live according to the Torah if you cannot have a copy for reference? The only option is you had to memorize it. And that was the way it was done. You had to memorize the first five books of the Old Testament, at least. So the Jewish educational system was built on this. At the age of six, you started memorizing the Torah. And you had classes 5 days a week, just like we have today, and the local rabbi was your teacher. So as a child of six, you would go to the synagogue, and the most respected man in the city would greet you with a slate, with a dollop of honey on it, and then you would go and sit down, and he would remove this ancient scroll of the Torah. And as you sat speechless and in awe, the rabbi would have you lick your slate to taste the honey, and then while the kids were licking the honey off their slates, he would tell them that the Torah is sweeter than the honeycomb. And then he would start teaching them the Torah, to memorize it. So by the time they were 10 years old, they had memorized all of the Torah, all of the first five books of the Bible, word by word. Now, these classes were called Bet Sefer, meaning Bet, huis, Sefer, book. So, house of the book. Now, after this time, at the age of 10, most Jewish kids were pretty well finished with school. They were able to memorize the first five books of the Bible. And they were sent or left to stay at home to learn the family trade, because this is what they are going to do for the rest of their lives. So they would either be fishing, or they have to learn carpentry, or how to make sandals, or how to weave baskets, or whatever the family trade is. After this initial schooling, the first year of schooling, they would go home and learn the family business, because that is what they would do for the rest of their life, most of them. And you would recall a lot of times when Jesus spoke to people, he would tell them, you know it is written, and then he would quote from the Old Testament, and they would know, and they would be able to quote with him when he quoted from the Old Testament, because they memorized it starting from 6 years of age. Now, if you were one of the bright sparks in your class at Bet Sefer, at this initial stage of the educational system, the first tier, then you were allowed to continue in school to a next tier or next level, to something called Bet Midrash, meaning house of study. And here they studied all the Hebrew scriptures, our complete Old Testament, and memorized all of it between the ages of 10 and 14. We let the bar slide a bit on this one. Up to the age of 14, they had to memorize the complete Old Testament, word for word. And during this time, the students also learned the Jewish art of questions and answers. Instead of answering with an answer, they were taught to answer with another question. So in this way, the students could demonstrate both their knowledge and their great regard for the scriptures. And they were taught to be curious about the scriptures. It's interesting in Luke, the second chapter of Luke, we read that after 3 days, Jesus' parents were looking for him. And after 3 days, they found him in the temple courts, sitting among the teachers, listening to them and asking them questions. Everyone who heard him was amazed at his understanding and his answers. Jesus was at this stage, he was 12 years old, which falls in the bracket of the age group that would attend this, where they learned to ask questions, to interpret the scriptures. But then after this, when you reach the age of 14, you were considered to be a man, a well-learned man. But now, you also got the go-ahead to go on and learn the family trade, whether it be then fishing, carpentry, or weaving baskets, or making sandals. So you also continued into the family trade. And some of these guys that completed Beit Midrash later would become elders, Jewish elders, or part of the Jewish council. But they will never be rabbis. If you were the cream of the crop at this level of the educational system, you could ask permission to go and study with a famous rabbi, often leaving home to travel with him for lengthy periods of time. And if you got permission, you had to get permission from your Beit Midrash. They will give you permission to go and pursue a rabbi. Then you can continue into Beit Talmud, meaning house of learning. Beit, house, Talmud, learning. And this was the longest duration, as it went from age 15 to 30. But to participate in Beit Talmud, you had to apply to a specific rabbi and then be invited by that rabbi, if he selected you, to follow him. So if he selected you, he would begin a process of grooming that would lead to the potential of you becoming a rabbi yourself at the age of 30. So at 14 years of age, the standout students of the Beit Midrash would approach a rabbi and request him to become his disciple. And the rabbi would then quiz this young man on all things Old Testament. He will test his reasoning, on moral issues, on the scriptures. And if the rabbi determined that you were good enough, he would say, "Come follow me. Take my yoke upon you and become my disciple." Those who were chosen were referred to as Talmudim, meaning disciples, the Hebrew translation for disciple. If that rabbi chose you, you are his disciple. And you would literally follow in the dust of that rabbi. You do everything you can to emulate him in all of his mannerisms. So his disciples would eat the same food in exactly the same way as their rabbi. They would go to sleep and awake in the same way as their rabbi does. And more importantly, they would learn to study and understand God the exact same way as their rabbi. And a disciple had only one goal: to become like his rabbi. That was his only goal. To become like his rabbi. To become a copy and paste of his rabbi. That was it. Now, it happened that somebody would approach a rabbi, and while quizzing him, the rabbi find him not good enough or bright enough or have a good enough understanding of the Old Testament, then he would say, "Obviously you know the Torah, but you don't have what it takes to be just like me. So go on and apply your trade. Go work with your family. Go learn the family business and live a good life that your sons may grow up to be better than you. Maybe they can become rabbis. So when Jesus found his disciples preparing their nets, preparing to go out fishing, they were applying their family trades. They weren't the disciples of any rabbi. They didn't make the cut. And we don't know at what stage they left the schooling system or the educational system, but they weren't good enough to be disciples. Otherwise, they wouldn't have been applying the family trade. Otherwise, Jesus would have found them following another rabbi. So they weren't the brightest of all the Jewish young minds. But then he extended them an invitation saying, be my disciples. I want to be your rabbi. And then they jumped at it. Because they knew exactly what he meant when he said, come follow me. They knew how it worked. They just didn't make it in the previous draft. And now they have. And from that day, they started behaving like disciples. To a lesser degree at the start, but more and more as time went on. And they wanted to become like their rabbi. They wanted to become more and more like Jesus. They wanted to talk like him. They wanted to walk like him. They wanted to eat like him. They wanted to do what he does. Because that is what a disciple does. And when Jesus comes along, walking on the water, Peter wants to do what his rabbi does. He is so invested in becoming like Jesus. He's such a devoted disciple that he will try doing all the things that his rabbi does. He's so devoted to become like Jesus that he will even attempt the absurd. That he will even attempt the illogical. That he will even try and walk on water, even though it's physically impossible. He's so much sold out to following in Jesus' footsteps, to become like Jesus, that he even tried to walk on water. Got out of a perfectly good boat that wasn't sinking, that made it through the whole night in the storm. And the day was almost breaking. And he attempted to walk on water. Because he wanted to do what his rabbi did. He wanted to be like Jesus in everything that Jesus did. And he wanted to walk on water. And he did for a little while. And I'll get to the sinking at a later stage, maybe even as part of the series. But we will definitely talk about that at a later time, about Peter sinking. But he did walk on water for a while. He got out of a perfectly good boat into terrifying waters. And it seems like he couldn't swim. Otherwise, if he started sinking, he would have swam to Jesus, I think. He got out of a perfectly good boat into terrifying waters because he believed he's becoming more and more like his rabbi. He believed that he's becoming more and more like Jesus. And Jesus encouraged him. Jesus invited him to do this. If only we can be more like Peter. Really do what Jesus did. Act like Jesus. Love like Jesus. Speak to people like Jesus. Have the compassion and conviction of Jesus. John the Evangelist, also known as the disciple whom Jesus loved dearly, he wrote the Gospel of John as well. And he referred to himself as the disciple that Jesus loved dearly. He wrote in his first letter, 1 John, in the second chapter, verses 3 to 6. Verse 6 is actually the important one I want to get to. We know that we have come to know him if we keep his commands. Whoever says, I know him, but does not do what he commands is a liar, and the truth is not in that person. But if anyone obeys his word, love for God is truly made complete in them. This is how we know we are in him. Whoever claims to live in him must live as Jesus did. Whoever claims to live in him must live as Jesus did. And Peter tried this. The prototype disciple thoroughly believed that he should live like Jesus did in every aspect of his life. How far are your life as a disciple of Jesus removed from that of the prototype? And be honest with yourself. And this is the aim of the series, to look at the prototype disciple. I want to call it the gold standard, but actually the gold standard is Jesus. But we know we will never be fully like Jesus until we get to heaven, because he was fully man but also fully God. So we look at the next best thing. Somebody that was just fully human, and how far they progressed. So if you look at the life of the prototype disciple, and we look at our lives as disciples of Jesus, how much does it correlate? And be honest with yourself. Would you do anything Jesus did? Would you do the countercultural thing because that is what Jesus asked? Would you do the unpopular thing because that is what Jesus asked? Would you do the brave thing that Jesus asked? Peter even did the ridiculous thing, the illogical thing. That's how far he went in following Jesus. How far are you prepared to go in following Jesus? Looking at the prototype disciple, how do we match up in our following of Jesus? Let's close our eyes in prayer.